What's going on, everybody? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is Friday, December 1st, 2023. And I'm your host, as always, The Pody. We've got a lot to get to. It's late here on the East Coast. And let's see, number three, Washington, just finished off number five, Oregon, in a classic. So for some reason, and I don't know why, I should have jumped on this. I wasn't paying attention. I was playing some Call of Duty and finishing up dinner before the game and everything. So I didn't really notice it, but my brother had texted me before the game. I just wasn't paying attention enough to realize that Washington was 9.5-point underdogs against Oregon, a team that they previously beat. 11-1 Oregon. Their only loss was to Washington. I know Washington had a couple close calls down the stretch of late, but Michael Penix Jr. is, in my opinion, the Heisman winner. I don't know if he will, because he hasn't put up crazy numbers, and I don't know that he put up crazy numbers in this game again. Flashy numbers, but yeah, that was weird. They iced it late. I know, you know, Bo Nix had that crazy, like, 50-yard touchdown. The guy ran down the sidelines with about two minutes left to cut it to three. They tried the onside. It went out of bounds and whatnot, and Washington was able to run out the clock with a couple of first downs. So what a game. Washington is officially in the college football playoff. They are probably going to be they could be the 1, 2, or 3. Right now, they're in the 3 spot. We've got a lot of games today at noon, conference championship games and things to get to. So without further ado, let's jump right in. We're obviously going to start with college football, and we are going to start with number 3 Michigan beating number 2 Ohio State 30-24. This was a great game as well. We went down the shore to see my grandma, and we got to watch this game finish up. Well, we got to watch most of the game. I got there around 12:30, so I saw most of this game, and it was a classic for sure. And, you know, Ryan Day, he's got himself a Michigan problem now, and no Jim Harbaugh, no problem. Okay. I thought it was pretty hilarious that Michigan decided to fly over a spy plane over top the stadium before the game, which is ironic because they've been caught spying essentially with the whole Connor Stallions scandal. But yeah, very interesting there. Yeah, Michigan, they were able to run the ball. Blake Corum, couple touchdowns. McCarthy used his legs a little bit, and, you know, Ohio State, despite being dominated for most of this game, they got the ball late, down 6, and they were moving around the 50 or, past the 50, and it looked like, okay, they're going to go down, and they're going to win this thing by 1, and Michigan is going to, you know, be devastated here. And well, guess what? That Michigan D had other ideas. And whenever you're in a situation like this where it's coming down to the wire, one of two things is going to happen. It's either going to be a turnover or it's going to be, you know, a touchdown, and Michigan fans are going to be crushed. And this is how this one ended.
The wide receiver at the top of your screen, McCord, looks, fires, intercepted. Rod Moore and Michigan will win the game and head to the Big Ten Championship.
So, yeah, this was with about 25 seconds left. Look, Ohio State had a chance, but it was one play, and McCord was getting basically destroyed. They were coming in on him. They broke free, and he tried to force it. Couldn't really get everything on it because of the pressure, and he threw it into double coverage, and it was intercepted. Game over, Ohio State, donezo. Now, I don't know if Ohio State's completely out of the CFP. Probably they are, because you have a lot of teams on the outs in title games, like Texas, for example. A couple teams lingering there, right? You've got, you know, FSU. So with Ohio State not playing today, it really does hurt them. But again, if Georgia were to lose, if Michigan somehow were to lose to Iowa in the Big Ten title game, maybe it's possible. Probably not. But we'll see how it plays out for sure. But like I said, Ryan Day has a Michigan problem. He's 1-3 against Michigan, but 40-0 against the rest of the Big Ten. So look, his name is being thrown out there for possibly getting fired. And this is what happens when you can't get over the hump and be like, this was the Jim Harbaugh problem. That's why he's been rumored to be going to the NFL for the last couple of years. Really, it was before last year, mostly because he just could not get over the hump and beat Ohio State. And they were able to beat them without Jim Harbaugh. So yikes, watch out. The Iron Bowl was a classic. We had the kick six from a number of years ago. What was that, 2013? And now Bama has, I don't even know what you call this, the Hail Mary, the fourth and goal Hail Mary from the 31-yard line. How does this happen? Only Alabama, and they are still alive, and they will play Georgia. And should they beat Georgia today, they are probably going to find themselves in the CFP. And find me a team in Alabama, or find me another team that's hotter than Alabama right now. It's crazy. They have been one of the hottest teams. I know they had a little bit of a test. You know, they've had a couple close calls here and there, but over the last bunch of weeks, they have been just as good as anybody. But this was how this game ended, down by 4 with 42 seconds left, 2 timeouts left. So the game was basically over if they don't get this from the 31, 4th and goal.
But there's a lot of airspace to cover for Milroe. Still looking. Firing. Near corner. It's caught! Touchdown, Alabama! Isaiah Bond! On a 4th and a mile! Touchdown. 31 yards. Touchdown, tied.
We always keep thinking we've seen it all, and we never have we?
Bond, Isaiah Bond. Unbelievable.
Yeah, you heard that there. That's not James Bond. That's Isaiah Bond. So great call there. Somehow Bama just gets it done, and it just crushing if you're Auburn. I know they weren't, you know, in jeopardy, like to go to the CFP or anything like that. They didn't have that on the line, but big ramifications there for Bama. So getting that win was absolutely huge. I just don't know how that happens. Washington, like I said, won last night, in a close one by 3. They also got to that game by and stayed undefeated by finishing off another close game a week prior against rival Washington State. That was a lot closer than it really should have been. But again, good teams find ways to win, and that's been Washington's MO all year. They beat Washington State 24-21. You had number 5 FSU a week after losing star quarterback Jordan Travis. They found themselves in a dogfight with rival Florida. They trailed by 2 with under 3 minutes to go when Trey Benson called game.
Kansas, he kills us, seeing pressure.
Power formation, everybody lined up close to the football. Benson, first down, still running. Trey Benson, all the way to the end zone. Hat trick touchdown for Benson.
You cannot do that against this good of a back. He's got low center of gravity, great balance, runs through those arm tackles. The Gators defense has been playing well tonight, but missed tackles, undisciplined moments cost them tonight.
Absolutely. As you said, it was going to be 4th and 4 before they went after Rademacher.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That was a hell of a freaking run. But when you look at all the defenders and somehow he got through there, it's just bad tackling, missed tackling, can't happen. And Florida State finds a way to get it done. Just unbelievable. So, again, they're not out of it just yet. They get to play Louisville. And if they take down Louisville, you never know. what could happen. Okay, number one, Georgia. They also managed to survive rivalry week against Georgia Tech, which put up a much better fight than I think Kirby Smart and company anticipated. Georgia was not going to walk to victory like they did against Tennessee a week prior. That was just a blowout. It was at 38-10. But instead, Georgia Tech put up 10 points in the fourth quarter to cut it to a one-score game. But in the end, the deficit just proved to be too much as Georgia was able to hold on for the 31-23 victory and remain unbeaten and your number one team. Okay, so now that conference championship week is here, you have, again, Georgia versus Bama in the SEC championship. We know the ramifications of that one. Michigan at number two, they have the easiest matchup. They're facing Iowa in the Big Ten championship game. I think the over-under is 35 in this game, and people are saying to hammer the under because they don't see Iowa scoring at all, maybe 3 or 6 points. That's crazy that this is so low. But again, they historically keep hitting these unders every single week. It's been a cash cow. I don't know that I could do it or bet it myself, but it's just something to put out there. If you've been betting it, keep it going. Like I said, FSU at number five. Oregon lost, you know, so actually FSU, they're not number five. They're number four. Oregon was number five. Let me make sure of that. Yeah, FSU is number four. So right now they're the number four team. They're in the college football playoff. They just have to beat number 14 Louisville at 10-2, which again, that's not an easy task. That one's tonight at 8. So FSU, you get a win, you are in. You lose, you open this thing up for a bunch of teams. I don't know. This is going to be wild. So let's see so Oregon's done now that they lost. Who's number six? Who has a chance? I know Texas is there at number seven. Whoever was number, is it going to show me here? Okay. Number six. Oh, okay. Number six is Ohio State. So that's interesting. I think if FSU loses, then Texas potentially will jump in there. Not potentially, Texas will jump in should they win. This is going to get interesting, man. Wow, is this going to get interesting. So if Georgia loses, then Texas at number seven has to leap Ohio State. They have to leap Oregon. And do they leap Florida State? Should Florida State win? Because Florida State would be undefeated, so I would say no. But would they then leap Georgia? Is the committee going to put Georgia out as two-time national, you know, reigning national champs? I don't see it. So this is wacky. This is going to get interesting. Florida State and Georgia need to lose for the chaos to just erupt. This would be great. So then, of course, you've got Texas. Texas is sitting at 11-1. They're number seven in the country right now, and they're facing a 9-3 Oklahoma State team that, quite frankly, Oklahoma State has been reeling the last couple of weeks. It's been a little crazy. And somebody tell me how the Big 12 just gave Mike Gundy Coach of the Year honors at 9-3 over Sarkisian at 11-1. That was a little telling. They're saying, "We don't buy Texas. Don't let the door kick you on the way out of, you know, of the Big 12 on your way to the SEC next year." So that was eye opening. They did not give Sarkisian Coach of the Year honors, which is a little petty. But guess what? I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Okay, I spoke about Bama, Georgia. We know what's at stake there. I just want to see Ohio State. Like, I want to see the chaos if a bunch of these teams lose and see what happens. Will Ohio State get in? It would just be hysterical if they do. Okay, Michigan State has named a new head coach. We all know the saga that was going on there with Mel Tucker, the firing there. They named Oregon State coach Jonathan Smith their new head coach. He had been at Oregon State as their head coach, which is his alma mater, since 2018. And he played quarterback for the Beavers from 98 until 2001. He gets a 7-year contract starting at $7.25 million, which is a lot. With Smith leaving, Oregon State will promote Trent Bray to head coach. Bray had been the defensive coordinator for the past 2.5 years. Houston fired Dana Holgorsen. Indiana fired Tom Allen, who, by the way, has a $15.5 million buyout. Speaking of Indiana, they named the James Madison coach as their new coach. What's his name? Let's see. I know he has a very well-known family, Signetti, whatever, however you pronounce it, Kurt Signetti. I believe his brother was a offensive coordinator or something at Rutgers. I know his father was a well-known coach. But Signetti, he comes from Division II. Then he went to James Madison, brought them to Division I. We all know what they did this year. So, yeah, that's probably a pretty good hire. He'll get a chance to showcase his talents in the Big Ten, in a Power 5 conference at a Power 5 school. And let's just say, like, call it what it is. Indiana, it's tough for Tom Allen because Michael Penix Jr. was his quarterback. And they were a top 10 team with him there a few seasons ago. And then he just, you know, the grass is always greener on the other side. So he goes to Washington, and Tom Allen got screwed out of a job, essentially. So it's tough. It's tough in this age of NIL for sure. Okay, OU offensive coordinator Jeff Lebby, that's Oklahoma, he was hired at Mississippi State, and Duke's Mike Elko will replace Jimbo Fisher at A&M. Quick on Mike Elko, he will make a base salary of $7 million over 6 years and will also receive major bonuses for making the college football playoff, that's $1 million, winning a conference championship and or reaching the college football playoff quarterfinals, $1.5 million. And if he reaches the CFP semifinals, that's $2 million. Or if he wins a national championship, he'll earn a bonus of $3.5 million. The A&M job, though, this was a weird one because earlier reports linked Kentucky's Mark Stoops to the job, but fans went crazy on social media. I guess they didn't think that Stoops was a flashy enough hire. I don't know. They did not want Mark Stoops, so they reevaluated, and that's when they went back and hired Mike Elko, who was previously the defensive coordinator at A&M from 2018 to 2021. And even juicier, you have now Riley Leonard, Mike Elko's former quarterback at Duke, who has entered the transfer portal. I thought naturally, okay, maybe he'll go to Texas A&M with his coach. Well, I'm hearing he's going to Notre Dame. That's juicy because Notre Dame plays Texas A&M in week one. So look out for that next season. And here's a great one. Arkansas is hiring Bobby Petrino to be its offensive coordinator. Yes, that Bobby Petrino, the one that was head coach from 2008 to 2011 when the school saw some of its best years. Petrino basically left his job when he was head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, just left midseason basically to take the Arkansas job way back in 2007. He was fired after getting into an alleged motorcycle crash, then lying about being alone on said motorcycle. Then he showed up for media day. This will go down in history. He had the neck brace. He was all beat up. They memed it. It's still out there. Still going strong. Basically, what happened is Bobby Petrino had a 25-year-old female former Arkansas volleyball player that he had hired out of 150 applicants who he was sleeping with. And she was with him on said motorcycle. And she fled the scene. Because they didn't want to be associated or linked to one another because, well, he was sleeping with her before he hired her out of 150,000 or excuse me, out of 150 applicants. And Arkansas wouldn't have, you know, that's a conflict. They wouldn't have let him hire her at all. And even better, she had a fiance who worked at the school, and he resigned a day after this incident. So rumor has it that they didn't really get into a motorcycle crash because she was perfectly fine. Rumor has it that said fiance found out about said motorcycle crash and beat up Bobby Petrino because she's 25. At the time, Bobby Petrino is probably 50 years old or whatever it is, or at least in his mid to late 40s. So yeah, this is juicy. So only in sports, only in college football, do you hire back the former head coach that you had to fire because of some juicy scandal. And let's face it. I mean, he was at Texas A&M as their, you know, offensive coordinator or sort of play caller, but Jimbo Fisher, from what I understand, was calling all the plays. And some people wonder if they would have just let Bobby Petrino call the plays, would they have done a lot better, because it didn't really work out so well for Jimbo Fisher. So very interesting for Arkansas to rehire Bobby Petrino. But since the Arkansas drama, where has Petrino been? Again, I just told you he was at A&M. He was hired a few years back. He kind of popped up out of the blue. Western Kentucky hired him to be their head coach. Had a little bit of success there. Went back to Louisville for a second stint, and then was at Missouri State before joining Jimbo Fisher and Texas A&M. So, yeah. Also, a few quarterbacks entered the portal. I just told you about Riley Leonard. I'll give you another one. Kansas State quarterback Will Howard, who was a four-year starter and won the Big 12 in 2022. Let's see where he finds himself. And then also entering the portal is Miami quarterback Tyler Van Dyke. I don't know too much about him. I think he was a very highly touted recruit, maybe a five-star player coming out of high school. The name does ring a little bit of a bell, but... Okay, let's get to the NBA real quick. The association is finally, or law enforcement as well, is now looking into serious allegations of an inappropriate relationship surrounding Thunder guard Josh Giddey and a minor. So yeah, everybody knows about this by now. Josh Giddey is 22, 21 years old. He's from Australia. He's a very good player. I didn't know much about him when he was drafted. And came into the league a few years ago, but he was like getting triple doubles and he turned out to be a very good player. Well, he posted videos on social media, like FaceTiming this girl's brother, and he's with the girl laying down, and people, internet sleuths, found out who this girl was, and they're saying she's like 17 years old, so that would not make her legal. So this is a whole situation. The Thunder won't, you know, they're mum about it. They're not speaking about it. Josh Giddey isn't speaking about it. It's just a whole mess. And if it's true, yikes, because did he know? Did he not know? Should have known. It's tough out there. Got to be careful, guys. Okay, also, in a surprising move, Mark Cuban is selling a majority stake in the Mavs to casino magnate Miriam Adelson and her family. So Cuban is going to retain shares and stay in charge of basketball ops. Apparently, the reason he's doing this is he wants to partner with Adelson and her casino company to build a new arena with gambling operations. The sale is for $3.5 billion, and considering Cuban bought the Mavs in 2000 for about $285 million, this is a roughly $3 billion ROI with inflation.
Oh my God.
Which is just incredible. Let's get to the in-season tournament chaos that took place. Tuesday night. So I didn't realize it was only four games in group play. It was just four games, and then the top eight teams advanced. So there was some chaos. They were listing out all the different scenarios for like the Knicks, the Nets, the Bucks, the just everybody that was still alive. And it was too much to keep up, because the difference in all of this was point differential. And when you play only four games, a lot of these teams had the same record, so it came down to point differential. So this leads us to Tuesday night with the Celtics and Chicago Bulls, and the Celtics were up 32, and they were hack-a-shacking Andre Drummond because of point differential. And Joe Mazzulla was trying to explain this to Billy Donovan, who did not want to hear it. They kind of got into it a little bit at midcourt. It's just not a good look to be doing this. Boston ended up getting in. I know the Nets late, they were showing they needed to win by 19. They got up 13. They were trying to chuck up shots and everything, and they weren't able to hold on. So the Nets got knocked out. They were 3-1, and they didn't make it. So this is what I don't like about this in-season tournament so far, and it was just too difficult and too hard to keep up with this points system how many points teams needed, and just it was absolute chaos. So in the end, the knockout rounds, the group stage is over. Knockout rounds will start December 4th. Quarterfinals will be December 4th, followed by the semis December 7th, and the finals December 9th. Here are the matchups. The Knicks made it in as the 4 seed. They will play the 1-seeded Bucks. Then you have the 3-seeded Celtics will play the 2-seeded Pacers. In the West, you have the 4-seeded Suns will take on the 1-seeded Lakers. The 3-seed Pelicans will take on the 2-seed Kings. I want to say the Warriors would have made it if not for that epic collapse against the Kings. And more on the Warriors later. They're reeling. They're really struggling. In other news, this is a tough blow for a bad Charlotte team as it is. LaMelo Ball, he sprained his right ankle in a 130-117 loss Sunday and could miss extended time. Quick note, that is the same ankle he had surgery on in March. Okay. And then Gary Payton, Payton is the one that blocked Victor Wembanyama. Crazy block. He's got crazy ups, but he will be sidelined, and I'm hearing months possibly, with a torn right calf. This guy can never stay healthy, but he's a solid player. He's helped them win a championship or two. What can I say? It's just a tough blow. A torn right calf, that's got to be painful, and that's going to be tough because the calf injuries always lead to the Achilles injuries, so I don't see him coming back anytime soon. Warriors, they started 5-1 this season, are now just 8-10 and struggling mightily. They got Draymond back after his suspension, and of course he gets teed up immediately upon coming back. Steph Curry's putting up all-time numbers, and I want to say last night, I don't know if it was last night, I think it was, Steph Curry attempted a shot. You know how he throws up these shots like in pregame and stuff, like from the tunnel. This one was from the opposite tunnel. I don't know the distance. It was unfreaking believable. He had to basically keep this thing like under the Jumbotron, and it should have went in. It didn't go in. It hit back iron, but it was right on line. It was, oh my God, it was unbelievable what this guy can do with a basketball. Okay, let's get to the NFL a little bit. Week 12 brought up some crazy finishes. It was a very successful week for yours truly with the bets. Could have been a lot better, but we had the Giants and Tommy DeVito narrowly escaping the Patriots thanks to a missed 35-yard field goal by Pats kicker Chad Ryland in the final seconds. I had Giants +4.5 cash. That was the first time Belichick ever lost to an undrafted quarterback. We also had the Jags holding on to beat the Texans by 3 as Texans kicker Matt Amendola came up just short on a game-tying 58-yard field goal. I'll play that in a second, but he also missed a 50-yarder before that. Amendola, I don't think, has ever made a 50-yard field goal, and I had Jaguars -1.5, so I was holding my breath on this one. Indeed, it was short. I had to hold my breath for a minute because when it hit the crossbar, I couldn't tell if it went in or not. Sometimes they do go up and in, but it did not. And the Jags hold on to cover the 1.5. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The Steelers, Pittsburgh, they managed to survive Jake Browning and the Bengals. The firing of Matt Canada, great, it's whatever. The offense put up just 16 points, so I'm not going to sit here and say it was a great move. They've got some problems. Deontay Johnson dropped a touchdown. That cost me $100. I'll get to that in a second. And they just got past the Bengals because of Joe Burrow was not there, and their defense was able to do just enough to survive that game, 16-10. The Colts also had a bit of a scare against the Bucs. They were pretty much dominating this game, but ultimately, you know, the Bucs came back a little bit. Ultimately, they were able to hold on for the 27-20 win. That was another one of my bets. So I was hitting a home run here. The Broncos took care of the Browns and Dorian Thompson-Robinson 29-12 for their 5th straight win. DTR was actually knocked out of this game on a vicious hit with a concussion, which means, guess what? You guessed it. Joe Flacco will be starting on Sunday. It is official that Joe Flacco is starting, and I believe he needs 216 yards to pass Joe Montana for 20th on the all-time passing yards list, which is just crazy. The Falcons earned a crazy little victory over the Saints, which means they are now in first place at 5-6. The Saints were my pick to win the division. This is a very bad division. I thought Derek Carr would help them win that division, but they're now 5-6, and the Falcons are in first place, and they get to come and play the Jets, and they are somehow 2-point favorites against my Jets in MetLife Stadium. So I disagree with that. I think the Jets will win, whether I bet it or not. I don't think so, but I'm just putting it out there. The Jets at plus 2.5 is a juicy number, or two, whatever it's at now. It's also worth mentioning Falcons kicker Youngway Koo, who's from New Jersey by way of South Korea, by the way, is the all-time... he has the highest kicking percentage officially now in NFL history. So that is insane. He's still kicking, though, obviously, so things can change. Justin Tucker's up there as well. So, but yeah, that's crazy. But back to this NFC South. It is the worst division in football. No team is above 500. Not to mention you have the Panthers, who fell to the Titans and are now 1-10. Owner David Tepper, I heard, was in the locker room throwing F-bombs around afterwards. He decided that 11 games was enough. He fired Frank Reich. It is the shortest tenure for an NFL head coach since 1975. Reich and his coaching staff never saw eye to eye with Tepper. According to reports, they all wanted Stroud, but Tepper made them draft Bryce Young instead. And how's that worked out? Special teams coordinator Chris Tabor, he took over as interim head coach, and I don't know why, he just decided to promptly fire Deuce Staley and Josh McCown. Boom, gone. Just like that. This team is in shambles, though, and it starts with their delusional owner, in my opinion. How long has he owned the Panthers? Not very long. In and out of coaches. I don't understand it. And for Frank Reich, he is the first coach to be fired in back-to-back years, because he was the Colts coach last year, got fired, was hired by the Panthers, and fired after 11 games. So that's crazy. One of the better games of the week took place in Philly between the Eagles and Bills. I thought the Eagles would run away with this one. All things considered, what's been going on with the Bills, they had their little get-right game against the Jets, but it's the Jets, so I thought that Philly would still dominate this game. But that was not the case. The Bills were actually sort of dominating this game, and it was going back and forth, but the Bills had the lead, and it looked like the Bills were going to win this game in the pouring, freezing rain, but Jake Elliott had other ideas. We saw Matt Amendola miss a game-tying 58-yard field goal. Well, Jake Elliott said, "I'll take your 58-yard field goal, and I'll serve you a 59-yarder in the freezing rain."
And Elliott puts the toe on it, and they can't.
So that tied the game. They went to overtime, and the Bills got the ball to start. They went down, kicked a field goal. The Eagles got the ball. They started moving it like crazy, and here was Jalen Hurts for the win.
And this would be the pedigree of championship teams.
Hurts to the end zone, and the Eagles have won it in overtime.
Yes, they have, and they are now 10-1 or 11-1, whatever it is. And the only team to still beat them still is my New York Jets. So that's a little bit crazy. Sean McDermott can't hide anymore. They are 6-6. You might have fired Ken Dorsey, but good luck if you don't make the playoffs. Let's see. The Chargers lost on Sunday night to the Ravens. They are now sitting at 4-7. Brandon Staley, in my opinion, will be and should be fired at season's end, if not sooner. We all know Rex Ryan went as far as to say he should go back to Division III where he belongs. I think Sean McDermott's on the hot seat. I think Dennis Allen's job could very well be in danger as well. They seemingly struck out with this Derek Carr signing. It does not look like it's going well. The offense can't really muster anything. And if the Saints do not win that division, I think he should be fired personally. And because I think they should have ran away with this division. When you look at them on paper, they were the team to beat going into this season. And they are not, they're 5-6. They're underachieving. Crazy. Riverboat Ron Rivera is also probably going to be out of a job by year's end. The Commanders own a top five pick, and they went full tank mode when they traded Sweat and Chase. So, yeah. The Vikings were a mess on Monday Night Football. Just when you thought that Josh Dobbs, the great story, that everything surrounding the Vikings, having won five in a row until that Denver game last week, he threw four interceptions and watched as Justin Fields marched the Bears down into field goal range for the game-winning 30-yard field goal. Dobbs was so bad that there are rumblings inside the organization now that after their bye week this week, Nick Mullins, who's back off IR, is going to be the starter That's a bit excessive and dramatic. Dobbs scored the game go-ahead touchdown late. I know he threw four interceptions, but he hit Hockenson. They took the lead. The defense blew it at the end, allowing Justin Fields and company to go down and win the game. So I'm just saying, I know if he didn't throw the four interceptions, they probably win the game going away, but Fields fumbled twice as well. So those four turnovers negated themselves to be only two turnovers. So I don't know, but he was bad. They were not good. And they should get Justin Jefferson back after the bye as well. So of course that is going to help, but I'm just hearing that possibly Nick Mullins could start. We'll see. They win five in a row. Now they've lost two in a row. It's tough. After their loss to the Chiefs, 31-17 loss to the Chiefs, Raiders interim head coach Antonio Pierce confirmed that veteran cornerback Marcus Peters was released. Peters has been a huge disappointment this year and was even benched on Sunday. We'll see if some of these contenders decide to pick him up. I know the Cowboys could definitely use some help in the secondary after what we saw on Thursday night. Last night, that was just an ugly one. That was the best Thursday night game of the year, by the way. But that Cowboys secondary could definitely use some veteran help. Marcus Peters there. I know he's been on the Ravens. Maybe they decide to try and pick him up. We'll see what ends up happening there. The Jets designated Aaron Rodgers to return from IR on Wednesday, 79 days since he ruptured his Achilles, or roughly 79 days there since he ruptured it on September 11th, opening night. Just four plays in. The designation means Rodgers can practice with the team, but does not mean he's set to return anytime soon. The team has 21 days to activate him. If they don't, his season is over. Rodgers even admitted, by the way, this week that he's not close to being ready to play in a game, but will continue to ramp it up and do more each and every day and every week. He was out to prove to the world, right, that he could make this comeback, and he has proven, in my opinion, that he's come back faster than anyone. That doesn't mean he needs to get into a game and play to prove anything. He's proven it. He's on a practice field. He's dropping back. He's making throws. It's unbelievable. 79 days with all the ayahuasca and all the crazy medicine stuff, the dolphin sex, whatever's going on. He's defying the odds, the speed bridge, all of it. His work ethic is unbelievable. And round of applause to Rodgers. But with this O-line and this team being virtually out of it, I think they have a 0.4% chance to make the playoffs. Just bag it in. You're not playing this year. Beef up the O-line, get Davante Adams in the offseason, and then let's come back and win a Super Bowl next year. Thursday Night Football. Dallas entered 8-3, but with zero wins against teams with a winning record. Seattle, although just 6-5, they represented a much tougher test than the 9.5-point spread suggested, in my opinion anyway. I know no Kenneth Walker, so we're going to have to wait and see what that would look like. But the Seahawks absolutely dominated right off the bat. They had a 3rd-and-8 or so, and Geno makes the best throw of his life, hits DK Metcalf on like a deep slant, and Metcalf was gone. It was man-to-man. He housed it, and they took an early lead there. This was going back and forth, but Seattle was pretty much dominating this game, and Geno looked like an absolute animal in this game. He was doing everything. But they had a couple of questionable fourth down calls late in the fourth quarter, and that seemed to be the difference. So, you know, you got to give the Cowboys a little bit of credit for coming back, but if Seattle could put up 35 on them, man, this was like the highest scoring Thursday night game. 41-35 was your final. The Cowboys do win it by six, but a little bit telling that they were able to put up 35 points. That's going to be a problem come playoffs. And like I said, their secondary is beat up, so they could definitely use help there. But listen to this. The Cowboys are averaging 42 points per game over the last four games. All have been wins. They're pretty like the hottest team offensively in the league right now. They're tied for the NFL's second-best record behind only 10-1 Philadelphia. It's just wild. The Cardinals released tight end Zach Ertz. He was on injured reserve, but is healthy now, I believe, and he's cleared waivers, so he is free to sign with any team. Of course, he's going to want to go to a contender. The Ravens, they lost their tight end. You know, maybe he goes back to the Eagles, where he has history there. Dallas Goedert coming off that broken arm. I don't know. We'll see where he ends up. Something to keep an eye out for. And then let's talk a little baseball real quick. The Cardinals and free agent Sonny Gray agreed to a 3-year, $75 million deal. Gray was awesome last year in Minnesota, finishing second behind Garrett Cole in the Cy Young race. You had free agent pitcher Kenta Maeda signing a 2-year deal with the Tigers, and 34-year-old Jason Hayward is back with the Dodgers on a 1-year deal. Let's get to some golf. The Hero World Challenge. Tiger Woods is back playing in his first tournament in quite some time, this one taking place in the beautiful Bahamas. After two rounds, he sits at a respectable 1 over par. Scottie Scheffler and Jordan Spieth were tied for the lead at -9. You had Justin Thomas was up there, a couple of other guys, Ryan Harmon, Matt Fitzpatrick, Morikawa, all in the mix, Finau, bunch of guys in the mix, and they're teeing off as early as, I believe, like 11:30 this morning. So you could turn that on, have that going while you get ready for some college football at 12 o'clock. So let's see. That's all I've got for you. That's all she wrote. You've got Texas, Oklahoma State. That's at 12 on ABC. Alabama, Georgia. That's at 4 o'clock on CBS. You've got Michigan, Iowa at 8 o'clock tonight on Fox. Florida, Louisville, 8 o'clock. Excuse me, on ABC. Those are the big ones. NFL games, you've got, again, Jets, Falcons. I already told you I like the Jets. Colts -1 over the Titans. That's something I'm going to be betting. And by the way, I hit a 4-leg parlay last week. All spreads, just straight up spreads, no alternate spreads, nothing. And I won for $194, and I needed Kenny Pickett to throw a touchdown. I had a 3-player parlay for three quarterbacks to throw one touchdown, and Kenny Pickett screwed me out of another 100. So I could have won 400. Instead, I ended up only winning 194. The parlay itself paid over 200. Let's see. You've got what else? Texans, Broncos. That's an interesting one. Texans at home. That should be a good test for the Broncos. Are they going to make the playoffs? They've won 5 in a row. Let's see. You got the Steelers, 6.5-point favorites over the Cardinals. I don't like that so much. You've got the Lions, Saints. I'm staying away from that. I'm staying away from Chargers, Patriots. Rams and Browns. I think Joe Flacco starting. This is must watch. This is a 425 game. Rams -3.5. They look really good with Kyron Williams back. They really do. So we'll see. And then of course the big one you've got at 425, Eagles and Niners, a rematch of the NFC Championship game. Give me the Niners by a field goal here. I think that's the spread. I like that one. And then of course the Chiefs are the Sunday night game against the Packers. That's in Lambeau. Chiefs are favored by 6. I like the Chiefs here as well. And Monday night's game is the Jaguars and Bengals. Jaguars are favored by 8.5. They probably cover that. Although don't bet on it. Depending on how I do throughout the week, I might jump on that because I almost jumped on the Cowboys. I thought the spread of 9.5 was too much. I was going to bet that live at 6.5. It dropped to 5.5. I thought about betting it, and I didn't. They did cover the 5.5, but they did not cover the 9.5 at all. And I know a lot of people that got screwed there. So that's all I have. I don't think I have an on this date in sports actually for you guys. So I'm apologizing. I apologize about that. But, it was a long day and you're lucky you even got a podcast out of me. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, yeah, I've got softball practice in the morning, so I've got to get up early and I got to take care of business. So I'm just going to end things there so I don't ramble. Enjoy your weekend. Hopefully you don't get any snow. It's been pretty cold here on the, East Coast as well. Yes, stay safe out there. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy some college football. Enjoy some NFL football. I hope you win some money. And with that being said, I'm the Pody, and I am signing off. Have a good weekend, everybody.